Hi, listeners. This is Effie, and this is your host of the Heal and Thrive After Narcissistic Abuse podcast. I thought I'd drop in and record another short episode this time. Just something I came across in my reading material about narcissism that I thought would be valuable for you to know about, and I also want to draw your attention to a coach and specialist in this field that has gone through the experience herself and has written extensively on the subject, and also, I believe, offers help to those who need it. I've often referred to various individuals who have helped me recover through their very thoughtful and detailed and well-researched articles, books, and also my own personal coach who and counselor who lives out in California, and I did several sessions with her during the course of my recovery. And I want to offer those names to you because those are people that I've come to trust and know their approach, and I feel that they are the closest to that they're basically they steer away from those terms and explanations that further victimize survivors of narcissistic abuse or any type of cluster B abuse. They understand, many of them have gone through it themselves, and they don't use terms that keep one feeling bad about themselves and stigma, words that stigmatize and really offer no valuable insight to us, especially during a time when we're going through the worst of it and trying so hard to reflect and figure out what went wrong and then get rid of that cognitive dissonance that keeps us in a whirlwind of just utter suffering. So I have always throughout this podcast stressed, be careful of a few things if you're still going through it or if you know somebody going through it. Be careful of people who throw around the words codependent or codependency in any way, okay, about to refer to or to explain the behavior of survivors. Be careful of people who may be narcissists themselves working in the field. Be careful also of people who make statements such as, why aren't you over it already? Or X amount of time has passed and seems like they are victim blaming, and which further does a number on survivors. This is exactly the kind of things that they had to withstand during the course of the abuse and the abusive relationship. The last thing you want to hear is that again from somebody else. And just overall, be careful who you go to for any form of advice or a shoulder to cry on. Be very selective. This is part of learning how to be protective of yourself and draw those boundaries. It's actually a very good exercise to begin to do to figure out who you can and cannot go to be more selective. Actually, it's a perfect way to start doing that for yourself, to create this impervious sort of circular wall, if you can envision this bubble around yourselves, where you're not going to allow just anyone to penetrate it. It's your choice. It's about realizing that it is our choice as to who we let into our precious world, in our lives, in our psyche. And this is a good place to start after you've gone through the worst of it in an abusive relationship, to then realize, okay, now I have a choice starting now, even while I'm going through the worst of it, even while I'm hurting, I'm going to practice this self-protection. And in the friends that I allow close to me, or to know more about what I'm going through, in the even the so-called specialists who I choose to dial up to help me with this problem, the articles that I choose to read, the blogs that I choose to read. Just be careful. I've also, you probably have come across in your reading and searching about what narcissism is. I think many of us get addicted to that reading, and we devour hours and hours, even though we've heard it before, we devour. Why? Because we're seeking some kind of validation, I think. We're seeking validation about what happened to us. That means you're still in some form or other, some extent or other, you're still going through cognitive dissonance. You're still in that haze of cognitive dissonance. And there's still a part of you that doesn't believe that what you experienced was abuse by a narcissist or cluster B disordered individual. You're still doubting that. You're still hearing the person's voice in your head blaming you. You're still wondering if you are to blame for some of it. You're still just in disbelief over what happened. You're not sure. You're seeking validation. That's something that's very common with survivors, this need for validation. So we go to these blogs and we go to these, like Quora, and spend endless and endless hours researching and just reading other people's stories. And while this has initially some value and it's part of the normal way of processing, okay, the loss and understanding what happened to us, I think after a while it becomes, you get trapped. You get trapped in this vicious cycle of it's never enough. It becomes like an addiction. It's never enough. No matter how much information you read or devour people's stories, it's never, ever enough. Like, you just need more and more and more. So I just want you to be very conscious of that. There comes a point where you need to turn inward, okay? You know what you know. Now, do start little by little every day, taking less and less time of looking at that stuff, and start talking about either, I guess, put all your knowledge and all your research into something that brings the focus back to you. So writing in your journal, or getting creative, like channeling all of that energy and research in a project, like in a writing project or in an art project, or just writing in your journal for yourself, or even start writing your own articles that you published, or start your own podcast that you put out there. Or just, you know, disconnect a little bit and take that first step and do something that doesn't involve thinking about what transpired. Just trust that it'll still be there if you need it. Just go to the gym or go listen to a lecture about something completely different. Take a walk through the park. If you're in, you know, In that part of the world where it's spring now, like now it's a lovely time for me in New York, because finally I can go and comfortably walk in a park, or go have a picnic in a park, or go sit outside somewhere, be in the sun, just release and let go, and maybe for promise yourself that for the next half hour that you're doing that, you're gonna just observe your surroundings and where the warmth on your skin, and just don't think about any of that. So little by little, to start disengaging from the literature, start disengaging from what happened to you. Any little bit, any effort will help. I just want to throw that out there. And just be careful of what you read in blogs from others, like in things like Quora, because while some of it is very useful and is, and many people are well-meaning, there's material out there that, again, stigmatizes victims, uses words like codependency, people who are still going through it and blaming themselves. But there are also a lot of narcissists, who have gotten the word has spread, and they've figured it out. Oh, maybe because they felt like they were slighted by their victim, so-called victim survivor, who wrote about them. So then they go and they try to hurt other people, other survivors on Quora with their, just venom and misinformation. Again, just be careful. This is a time to learn how to protect yourselves and create impenetrable boundaries. So I just want to remind all of my listeners and those of you joining me now, for the first time, of all of this. Now, I know I mentioned, in the previous two episodes, something that had occurred to me while out of the hell of cognitive dissonance, and a year and a half later, in a much, much better place. There are days now, and this is what I want you to know if you're still in the thick of it or still not over it and suffering. You will get there. Believe me, but I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. The only way to disengage, okay, and this is even for people who haven't even sustained narcissistic abuse or any type of abuse in a relationship, even people who have been, whose relationship is over, and they've been the ones who have been broken up with. It hurts more for the person, obviously, who is left. And in order to recover properly and give yourself a chance for a new life with new people, you have to disengage from the ex. You have to not have them on your social media. That has to stop. I'm seeing a lot of this stuff out there where people think, oh, I'm just going to be nice and still be, I don't want to be the bad guy. I can still be cool and be friends with the exes. Back in the day, that was not the case. When I was growing up, and I was in my early 20s and in my 20s, there's no Facebook and Instagram and none of that, where we kept in touch with our exes. If it happened, it happened via email. It happened via maybe, a phone call, sporadic, if the person want to get back in touch with their ex. But, you didn't know what was going on in their lives. You had no idea. You didn't look at pictures. You didn't get triggered in that way. Unfortunately, we are living in this digital age where people think, oh, it's okay, it's harmless to just stay quote unquote friends. First of all, unless you shared a family with the person, you were married to them, and even then, sometimes, you had children, you have children that where you need to, and I'm not talking about now in the case of where the person is a narcissist or is an abuser. I'm talking just generally, okay? Because this can help us later on, even if we're not with another narcissist and it's just a regular relationship that doesn't work out, and then how to navigate that. It's you can never be fully friends with an ex, let's face it. You were sexual with the person at some point, you shared intimate moments over and over again that you don't share with other people. There is a bond that needs to be broken in order to be able to give yourself fully to another human being, okay, at some point, and have a fulfilling life. And the only one who can control that, because there are people out there who will, as long as you stay friends with them, they'll stay friends, again, quote unquote, friends with you on social media. Nobody wants to be the bad guy unless, of course, they're a cluster B and they don't care and they're just like out to hurt their exes. Most people are gonna be like, ah, what the heck, I'll stay, I'll be the nice guy. I'll even like her stuff or his stuff once in a while. Send them a comment once in a while, and we're cool like that. I think that most people deceive themselves. Maybe if tons of time has passed and both parties have fully moved on and they're happy in or in their other lives and they're the new people they're with, and they have a full life, and then you're not going to care anymore, honestly, whether that person is in, is a follower, or whether you're still following them, you're not going to care one way or another. So what is the point? When we hold on to things like that, it only serves to keep some ties and our heartstrings still stay there, all knotted up. If you can picture that image of heartstrings and knots. And why do that to ourselves? Don't we deserve? I know it hurts. I know there's a part when you're fresh out of it that you want to stay connected in case. Okay? We always do the in case. And we don't want to be bad guys in case this person wakes up and they want us back. Do you know what? It's irrelevant. Whether we're on social media or not, it is irrelevant. The hard truth is, if somebody has taken that step to walk away or cut you off, we need to accept that they've made that conscious choice. They're not children. They've made that conscious choice. If they want you back, they would move mountains and earth to come back. If you're not seeing that, then that is your proof. You need to bring the focus as much as it hurts. There is a point of acceptance. Okay. Again, we're just talking generally now. Now I want to bring it back again to survivors of narcissistic abuse or any type of abuse. That is even more critical that we go no contact. And we break those trauma bonds, and we don't have the constant reminder or that itch to know. And the only way to break that pattern is to go full no contact. Okay? No peeking at their social media. Remember the times when I did that and how it brought me back, and how miserable you must have heard me sounding, how miserable I sounded. And how I took for myself. Okay, there will be moments while you're still in it that you will go back and look. It's just I know it's tough to disengage completely. And sometimes we're so used to the trauma that we seek out to re-traumatize ourselves. We do it to ourselves because it was part of the cycle, and we don't know how to be without any drama, without any abuse. And that's okay, as long as you can bring yourself back to that place and press the restart button, and now go another 2, 3 months of not peeking, another, 5, 6 months of no contact. It's okay. You can make a pact with yourself, like, and do it incrementally and gradually. That's okay too. All right. So don't beat yourself up if you've done it. That's important, not to beat yourself up, and be kind and compassionate with yourself. But each time, make that extra effort. Make that promise to yourself that you won't do that. Now, if you have children with the person, if there's something that still, you have a business with that person, you're going through divorce proceedings, you're going through a custody battle, you're going through, I have not been in that situation, so it's very hard for me to give you advice on that, other than what I've read myself, which I've mentioned before, the Grey Rock method. Just research that and try to just research that, and put those techniques and into practice in your life. While still, so basically, minimal contact, as minimal as possible when you're in that situation, everything done via messaging, or through a proxy, through a lawyer, someone that you trust who's a friend that can convey messages, an arrangement where another person drops off the kids, or they are brought out to be picked up by, in a public space where you don't have to go to the person's house. The person doesn't enter, like, they allow the children to walk into, let's say, the establishment, but you don't have to see them, the actual your ex. There are some ways, and just not get caught up in their drama, to just be in monotone, not g mindful to not give them any supply that they seek, whether positive or negative. So you're just like matter of fact. Again, I don't have a lot of experience with that, so I urge you to research, about how survivors who have to have no choice but to have some minimal contact with their abusive ex have the best ways to deal with them in that situation. And again, Google the Grey Rock method and see what comes up under that. Okay. So I thought it was important to recap, to remind you of all of this. And now, going back to the people that I would refer you to if you need a session with someone, if you're in California, she's based out of there. She cannot provide therapy sessions, psychotherapeutic sessions, across state borders, because you have to be licensed in the state where the patient is in. But she can provide counseling, what's known as counseling, on the specific topic, which basically what you're going through as a narcissistic abuse survivor. If you want to get a confirmation of your, based on your story and what you're going through, if the other is a narcissist. Although she can't diagnose, no one can diagnose from afar, but she can say that overall, based on what you're saying, based on what I'm hearing, based on what we know to be true about this person, that it's more likely they're not, that they're this. So if you need that, she can provide that. Also, again, just an experienced person, a specialist who can guide you, listen to you and give you advice and articles to read and so on and so forth. So she was just invaluable for me during my time, going through it. And that's Andrea Schneider. So if you Google Andrea Schneider and narcissistic abuse recovery, you will find her. She's one of the top people in this field. So, and she's incredible. So, I think if you can and you have the ability and the funds to, for a few counseling sessions over the phone with her, or if you're based in person, if you're based on the West Coast in California, I would highly recommend. The others that are online, and publish a lot of articles and books, is Kim Saeed, Saeed, and also Shahida Arabi, Shahida Arabi, Arabi. She has one book that I was reading while I was traveling and long flights, and I finished it in one flight, I remember, and it was so helpful to me when I was going through. I was in the thick of things. It just reinforced everything that I needed reinforced. And it was so on point. I believe it's Becoming the Narcissist's Worst Nightmare, if I'm not mistaken, is the title of one of her books. And she's got a few out there and coming out with more. She's just incredible, how she describes everything and how on point she is. And I recently came across something by Kim Saeed, an article, and I signed up to get her newsletters and links, informative links. To, well, I should say links to informative articles and blog entries about narcissistic abuse recovery and narcissism in general to understand it better. And I got something today, which actually prompted this my wanting to record another episode. Basically, she gets a lot of questions, as actually I do also, when you reach out to me. Are narcissists aware of their disorder? And then she has a recent article up about that, and she talks about, how there's this common misconception that they're not aware of what they're doing. And that we shouldn't hold them accountable for their seemingly unintentional wrongdoings. And then she talks about that, and how narcissism is on a spectrum of bad to like just evil, pretty much. And there's individuals who are mildly narcissistic, and there's the NPD variety who are full blown narcissistic personality disorder, and what that is and what that looks like. So, and how that on the far end of the spectrum, you have people who are very intentional in their abuse and sadistic and have traits of sociopathy and may even be. Have that comorbidly sociopathic. So she goes into that in detail. So I just wanted to draw your attention to that. But basically, it's what I've said before, that whether First of all, whether they know or not, that shouldn't be our focus. But sometimes we do. We're people, we ask these questions, right? And the more analytical we get about all this stuff, we ask those questions. We want to understand, right? Who were we with? Who is this devil that we were with? Or if we're still trying to get out of it, that we're with. How could this seemingly loving person in the beginning who mirrored, okay, and I'm going to, that's the operative word, mirrored our likes and our deepest desires, and all of a sudden does that turn, right? And ends up being our worst nightmare. Are they intentionally, are they like, like premeditated murderers, which just ups the ante, and they're even more deserving of the punishment and the, the karma, the bad karma that we wish upon them. So while we're trying to figure all of this out, right? I think it's important to note that the end result is the same, right? What they have done to us, their acts should be enough. All right. So if you ever doubt and you can't figure it out, go back to the act of what they have done to you. And at the end of the day, whether it was intentional or not, it's neither here nor there. We look at the end result. It's like when people say, don't look at what they say, what people say. Look at their actions over the course of time. The consistency in their actions will give you all the answers that you need to know who this person is, whether or not you should be romantically involved with them, whether or not you should allow yourself to have a friendship with them, whether or not they're worthy of your time and effort and for you to give back to them. Regardless, right? We should apply that in all aspects, in all different kinds of interactions and relationships in our lives. So it's the same here. Look at the act and the impact of the act on you. And that is your answer right there. But yes, we said we're human. In an effort to understand fully and analyze fully, we tend to be empaths and highly intelligent and emotionally intelligent and analytic in our ways of approaching the world. So, if you're still trying to understand, I think just know the more sadistic that these people have been towards you, the more likely that at some point it was intentional. Okay? It was, they wanted to see you hurting. Because this way they saw the hurt in your eyes. They even heard the words that came out of your mouth. They saw you curled up in a ball, and that gave them a level of satisfaction as a narcissist and disordered person that they were able to elicit that they were able to have such an impact on you. And they don't care whether it's positive or negative, it's all supply to them, it feeds them. And that's the hard piece. That's the piece we, as empaths, we can't understand because we don't want others to hurt generally. We don't want to see someone curled in a ball crying, whether it's for someone else or for us. If it's up to us, we want to make that person happy, like jumping up and down with joy. That's how we get fed when we see that they're just happy. And that's what we want. So it's hard for us. It's really hard for us to comprehend. But this is how these people, like I've said so many times before, how they behave and how they live their lives. And how sad is that? How truly sad, and is just really a pathetic and repulsive way to live one's life. And again, because part of the disorder is to not acknowledge fault, okay? Nothing is ever wrong with them. It's other people. They're the eternal victim. Other people make them do things, right? So even if they felt a pang of guilt, even in those cases where they were capable and they were struggling, they can't understand why they feel so bad, okay? They can't label it. They just feel like crummy. And they will not analyze it in the way that we would analyze it. They would look at it like someone else. What did someone else do to me? What did the world do to me? Why is it? I used to hear my ex say things like, I just try to be everybody's friend. And I run around helping people, which was bull. And if he was helping, it was so that he could get supply, he could feel needed, and important. I try to do so much for everyone, and look what I get in the end. I remember one time when, and I probably have mentioned this as an example, very early on, within the first 3 or 4 months of our relationship, and he had taken me to a friend's event that she organized in a big hall, a big space, like a music hall. And it was a Friday right after a long week at work. And I didn't know what I was walking into. And I walk into this clubby atmosphere, totally dark, strobe lights, is that it felt like a nightclub with just really loud, obnoxious music and, people dressed up. And I go in there with my work clothes, my laptop, my extra bags, whatever. And I'm not feeling right in that context. And I let him know. I'm like, I know this is your friend's fundraising event and what have you. I don't know how long I can last here. I'm just feeling really worn out. So I had put that out there to him. And I was willing, this is his friend. I was meeting her for the first time. I want to make a good impression and also, okay, I knew he wanted to be there, so I was like, maybe an hour tops, and then hopefully we can go, or I would leave. And then she grabs him at some point and says, I barely know this woman, and she comes and grabs him and says, I'm gonna take him away for a little. And I don't know, she had It was so loud in there, so I couldn't hear. In the end, she wanted him to help her with some technology stuff, some sound stuff that she was having issues with. But I didn't hear that part, so I had no idea. He disappears, can't find him anywhere. I'm okay for a while, but 10, 15, 20 minutes go by. Now we're going to a half an hour, and I'm sitting there by myself. I don't know anyone. It's so loud. I don't feel like, and I'm too tired to mingle and try to make an effort to interact with other people. And I'm just sitting there. He has his bags down there next to me. I don't know what to do. I'm texting him. The texts aren't going through because the signal is bad there. And I asked somebody if they could watch over the bags at the table. And then I go and I look around to try to find him. I can't find him anywhere. I see that there's a space downstairs. I go downstairs, but it's just the bathrooms. I call out his name, nothing. So now, of course, I can't even find her. And I don't know. I don't know anything, but I'm just not feeling right. And I am getting increasingly agitated, as anyone would in my situation. Now we're up to 40 minutes, okay? 40 minutes. Unacceptable. There's no reason why 40 minutes should pass. There's no signal. We can't communicate. He brought me there. He should have come to find me. Turns out he was upstairs in some media room trying to figure out what was wrong and the stereo system or something related to that. And he comes down because I had seen her, I had spotted her after a half an hour in the crowd, and I walked up to her and I said, "Well, where is my boyfriend? I'm just sitting here by myself and I'm not feeling that great." And I said, "This isn't appropriate. He's just left me here." And she's like, "Oh no, he was helping me. Please don't get him into trouble. I don't want to get him into trouble." And I said, "That's not the point. It's just, a matter of decency. I'm like, if you know where he is, can you just let him know? Because I think I want to leave soon. I'm not feeling good." And I guess she went to retrieve him, and he comes down 40 minutes later, and he's looking at me like nothing, like, "What's the matter with you?" And I said, "What's the matter with me? 40 minutes have passed, I'm just sitting here by myself. You know that I wasn't feeling right in this context, and you just leave me here? You know there's no signal, the signal's bad. You just leave me here?" I said, "This is not acceptable to me, and I'm drawing the line here. The fact that 40 minutes passed, you didn't think of your girlfriend that you had brought here, that I might be wondering where you are, that or just not feeling right to be sitting there by myself. You brought me here. You invited me here." So I actually said, "I'm not doing, I draw the line here," I said to him. And I've been in relationships before where the person has not taken my existence into account, and I'm not having it. And I actually picked up my bag and I walked out. And he starts saying things to me. "You are such a drama queen. You knew, my friend said." I said, "I did not hear your friend. I could barely hear a word in here. And you knew I wasn't comfortable in here. And yet 40 minutes, even 15 minutes shouldn't have passed without you communicating with me, knowing, just think about the other person that you're." And I found myself trying to teach my boyfriend at the time, to teach him how to be towards me, how to behave like a normal, like whatever that means, but with some level of empathy and understanding to put himself in the other person's shoes. If you find yourself trying to explain basic principles of how to be in the world, just basic politeness or decency to your significant other, this is a huge, huge red flag. I'm telling you now. If you have to explain to your partner how to be towards you, start. And you see that this is becoming a pattern, especially, start disengaging. I'm telling you right now, it's not going to get any better. People like that don't change. And that is a sign of wherever they are in the spectrum, it's a sign of utter selfishness and looking and being, self-centered and not capable of seeing the other person. Okay, that there's another person next to them with needs and wants and emotions. This is very important. So what had happened? He turned the tables on me. He blame shifted. He adopted the role of a victim. He started saying things like what I mentioned before. "Oh my God, I always try to help out. Look, I tried to help out my friend. I'm always the one trying to help out. And look what I get in the end. In the end, this is what I get. I get blamed. I get, all I try to do is do good and be good towards my friend. You know, this is what I started hearing. And at the time, I didn't understand. And I remember sitting there and taking it and feeling bad about my reaction and feeling like I had done something horribly wrong, and that he started gaslighting me and basically saying that I was a drama queen, that if he didn't, he used these terms, if he didn't love me, if he wasn't attached to me, he would have left me there. He would have left me. He would have walked away. Now, thinking back, oh my God, what a number. That's everything I needed to know right there. A man who leaves a woman he brought to an event 40 minutes and he goes MIA, whether it's for a good reason or not, it doesn't freaking matter. Okay? This is a person who is incapable of thinking about anyone but himself in that moment in time and what he's doing. A thoughtful, empathic human being would have thought, oh, you know, time has passed. She's sitting down there. I don't want her. And I can't text her. Clearly nothing is going through. I'm going to go down. I'm going to take a break, go downstairs and see if everything's okay. If she's okay, maybe I can bring her up here where I'm doing work. Or maybe I can at least let her know what's going on, give her the option of leaving, something. That didn't happen right there. B, then it happened. And then after the fact, you're being all of a sudden, the person is the victim. You are the perpetrator. You are the drama queen or king. You are the problem. Your reaction is the problem. And how dare you even question, how dare you even do this at my friend's event or in any other context? And then the gaslighting, right? So you're doubting yourself now. Now you're like feeling sorry for him. You're feeling sorry for the narcissist. Yeah. And that was one of the first big instances that I remember of, yeah. So I just bring this up again. I'm sure my listeners who have gone through all the episodes remember this. I believe I mentioned this before, but I feel it's important to just show you again, like a very vivid and powerful example that stays with me to this day of how this stuff plays out and how they are the eternal victim, right? And everything is done to them. They are just, and they're just incapable. And this is the crazy making piece. This is where we can get trapped, constantly seeking validation from them that we're not going to get, because in their world, you know, they're going to tell you that it's day when it's night. It's night when it's day time. So there's no winning, you see. There's no winning an argument with them. And if they give the appearance of that, they let you, quote unquote, win, they're going to take it out on you in some other way. And they're passive, they're covert narcissists. They're going to do it in a passive aggressive way, by not contacting you for a while, giving you the silent treatment, by ruining an event or a birthday or some other meaningful moment for you, not showing up or showing up late or being in a mood so that you're focused on them and not on the wonderful moment that you should be experiencing. Those are the passive aggressive ways that they're going to punish you, even if they've allowed you, so to speak, to win an argument or to feel like you've been validated. They're going to, just when you feel you've been validated, they will pull the rug underneath your feet. So these are the things that go on. This is why it is incredibly damaging. And the longer we've stay in something like this, the more we feel we've lost touch with reality. And the only way, when you're out of it, to really gain perspective, and now we're going to come full circle, the only way to gain perspective and not then gaslight yourself further with your thoughts about what transpired, right, is to disengage. Again, no contact, no looking at the social media, because if we're looking at the social media, we're only going to see the good stuff, the best parts of the person portraying themselves and their lives in a positive light. You know, we may see signs of a new partner or something, or like even a new partner where they seem to be living it up. And then you're wondering, and then here we go again. That's a form of gaslighting. And now we're allowing ourselves, we're doing it to ourselves by looking. So, you know, now we're creating this fantasy in our head, which is, and attaching meaning to all of that as if it's God's truth, and it's not. Okay. This is more part of the facade. And something that I haven't talked about before in length, I'll just touch upon it. Before this relationship that marked me, that I've had to struggle to extricate myself from the damage, which this one was the most damaging because it was the most it was done covertly in a way I didn't understand. The abuse was covert and insidious, and he was the kind of narcissist that was crafty in the way he went about the abuse so that it wasn't so apparent in the moment to me what was going on. Excuse me. So that is the most damaging. Because you don't know, you don't exactly, if you've never been through it before, you don't know what you're going through. And so I've been talking a lot about that, and I've hinted that there has been a previous relationship that was also, the person was highly abusive towards me. And I mentioned I had met this last narcissist 5 or 6 months, before or after the end of another relationship, a 2-year relationship. I was with someone before, extremely handsome man, 6'3", handsome, Swedish background, had moved to New York, had traveled the world, very worldly. He was very, very highly intelligent, IQ. Oh my gosh. Had read philosophical tomes, and, you know, he was a computer programmer. So, you know, I have a weakness for that. I'm highly attracted to smart individuals, men who are, extremely intelligent. And, he was that. And also, obviously, very handsome. So, you know, there were, and very, oh my God, from the beginning, very sexual, very seductive. So I had quickly fallen for him. But I was not also in the right place in my life. And he used that against me. And I won't go into details here, but I had been still separated from my previous relationship, and not fully separated. But I made that clear to him within 2-3 months when he wanted the relationship to become a relationship and he didn't want casual with me. I had mentioned to him that I was still going through a period of separation, and that I, because of financial reasons, I was still not fully divorced, and like I was going through this, And so I made him aware of it, and I said, I understand that that might not be what you, the ideal situation, but I'm fully separated. I'm not involved sexually with the person I'm with. I am with that I was with before. And I was very honest with him about my situation. And he started, the abuse started. At that point, I was too vulnerable. I was not in the right place. I shouldn't have been in that relationship because A, I had not come out of the other one fully, that I should have allowed myself the space to become my own person, clear out my own baggage, and then made wise decisions about who I allowed into my life. And these are the lessons that I've learned and I'm learning. And I was in a being in that state, I was very vulnerable to a narcissist, and he was the overt type. He was the kind that he knew he was good looking, he knew he was smart, and he would constantly like throw that around. And he was so overt about himself, about all that, that I would get comments from friends that he was too much, he has an ego, he's, they noticed that he had no interest in fully engaging on a deeper level with them. I had introduced him to my brother, to my cousins, to my cousin and her husband, and to various friends as the new person in my life. And they had seen aspects of him. They said, "Well, he's very intelligent and attractive. We worry about you, Effie," I remember hearing, because, he's so full of himself and no one exists but him in the room. And then constantly trying to engage people in these intellectual debates, that to test them, he would test people and their smarts. And he would constantly do that to me, test me and my smarts, and if I could keep up with him. And I, because I'm more intellectually driven, like I would allow myself to go down that rabbit hole with him. But then after a while of being with him, I realized like he would, this was his way of disengaging also emotionally. And so there was that bit. And then the abuse would start, even though he knew my situation and I've been honest with him and that it was going to take time for financial reasons. It was going to take time for me to dissolve the situation. He would call me names. "You're a coward. You're a bitch. You're a horrible person." He would drink. He was a drinker. And he would start calling me names, putting me down, saying like, "You're a coward and I want someone who's not." And I remember just when things were going well between us, he would say something so off at a party or somewhere while drinking that it was so triggering for me that I would then respond back. When he didn't like the response, then it was all out abuse in front of people, humiliations in public. I remember a fight in a cab where, he lashed out at me because I had dared to say something to the cab driver who was driving too erratically. And I said, "Please slow down." And I think I said it three times, and the cab driver continued. And I said, "I'm scared for my life here. Can we slow it down? Or else, I'll have no choice. There's a number I'm going to call." And he starts yelling at me. He used that to say, "You see, you're a horrible human being. You're threatening the driver. How dare you? You have no empathy. Now, this is a projection, right? That he would throw that at me all the time.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.